Okay, let's get started. This is session B349, What's New in Windows 8 and 8.1 Deployment. I'm Michael Niehaus, Senior Product Manager for the Windows Client Group out of Redmond. So we do want, in the next 75 minutes, to talk about really what's changed with Windows 8.1 deployment, and also talk about what's really changed going back to Windows 8 as well. We're not really going to talk about the new features in 8.1 beyond what's really affecting deployment. I mean, we covered those in the keynotes and in other sessions throughout the week. Here, we just want to focus on things that affect the deployment process. We'll talk about the deployment tools and how they've been updated to support Windows 8.1. And then we'll talk about the deployment products, MDT and Config Manager, that are layered on top of those deployment tools. So it has been a fairly busy week for Windows 8.1. There are new previews available for Windows 8.1, Windows RT 8.1, Windows Server 2012 R2. The ISOs for Windows 8.1 should be available by the end of today. They should be posted here not too long. You actually get kind of a head start on that with the USB keys. The USB keys are effectively the same content that you would be able to download from an ISO. Now, turning that USB key into an ISO would be an exercise for you to know how to use something from the ADK to turn that into an ISO file. I do have a session tomorrow afternoon talking about using the tools in the ADK, and one of those tools would be OSCD Image, and it would be able to do that. So if you want to learn how to do that, come tomorrow. We can show you how to do that. But those ISOs will be available soon to download. The only gotcha is that you won't see a Windows 8.1 Enterprise Preview ISO for a period of time. Those will be available in a few weeks before those will be available for download. So in the meantime, for your evaluations, you'll want to use Windows 8.1 Pro, or if you have a Surface-type device, a Windows RT-based device to do your testing of 8.1. The deployment tools have also been updated and released, so you can find the assessment and deployment kit for Windows 8.1 Preview on the Download Center. Just go out to the Microsoft Download Center and search for ADK 8.1. It'll find it fairly easily. There's a new MDT 2013 preview available. For that one, you need to go to connect.microsoft.com and register on Connect for the MDT program to download that. That would also be the same type of place to provide feedback, both for MDT and for Configuration Manager. The Configuration Manager preview is also available. You can download that through the System Center evaluation page. So those are all of the tools that you can work with to get a feel for how to deploy Windows 8.1. As far as Windows 8.1 goes, from a compatibility perspective, we expect things to be fairly compatible. It's not a huge change that affects lots of areas. It's really focused more on the modern environment and making additional enhancements to the UI and the modern environment capabilities. There's no real changes to the Windows 8 hardware certification requirements. And existing hardware that's able to run Windows 7, Windows 8 should be able to run Windows 8.1 without any issues. There are a couple of exceptions for Windows machines that successfully run Windows 7. In order to run Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, the machines do need to support certain processor features, NX, PAE, and SSE2. Those processor support pieces do need to be present, otherwise Windows 8 won't even boot on the machine. That's fairly common in most machines that are shipping today. The exceptions would be some of the lower-end Celeron-based machines and VMware 5.0. They don't include the processor support to boot Windows 8, so Windows 8 wouldn't be supported on those devices. Apparently, there are a few additional instruction set limitations in Windows 8.1 that causes Windows 8.1 to not run on a machine that could successfully run Windows 8. those are very obscure, affecting somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.2% of the machines currently running Windows 7 and Windows 8. Those, I can't even memorize the names of them. They're so obscure. So we need to do some more research on those, but we'll publish those restrictions in the future just to say every piece of hardware except CPUs that don't have these particular instructions will be able to run Windows 8.1. The requirements from a memory, CPU, and disk space perspective haven't changed with Windows 8.1. Basically, if it can run Windows 7, it can run Windows 8, it can run Windows 8.1. No changes there. And drivers, for the most part, should be compatible between the operating systems. Now, for those of you who have Ultrabooks, a lot of these Ultrabooks tend to be used with DisplayPort and USB 3 port replicators from Targus, from Lenovo. Others have these available. There are updated DisplayLink drivers for Windows 8.1. You would want to use those in order to get DisplayLink working with the preview. But so far, those are the only drivers that we've seen that needed updating for Windows 8.1. Desktop application compatibility is expected to be very good. Apps that work on 7 and 8 should continue to work on 8.1 with no changes. Windows Store apps, any existing Windows Store apps written on Windows 8 will continue to work on Windows 8.1 as well. It will be possible using the new developer tools and Windows 8.1 to develop an app that runs on 8.1 and doesn't run on Windows 8. So as we move forward with the APIs, you can start to create apps that are very 8.1 specific, but anything written for 8 will run on 8.1. Internet Explorer 11 is included by default in Windows 8.1. There's no mechanisms in place to run any earlier versions of IE. IE 11 will also be provided for Windows 7 at a later date. You won't be able to get IE 11, though, for Windows 8. The only way to get IE 11 is to go to Windows 8.1. So Windows 8.1 is really positioned as an update. It's an update to install on top of Windows 8. We expect a significant percentage of people to move from Windows 8 to 8.1. So 8.1 becomes the new mainline release where most of the efforts are going to be focused. There are compatibility modes in IE 11 to support every version of IE back to IE 7 and even some IE 6 type behaviors. Those compatibility modes really help with making sure that web apps work properly with the new version of IE. There are some security and capability enhancements in IE 11 that may cause some issues with IE add-ons, but most of the web pages should have a fairly easy time with the new version of IE. Now, we've talked about Windows 8.1 being an update. And as an update, how do you deploy it to existing computers? And here's where we start getting into some options. If you're running a consumer version of Windows 8, so let's say you're running Windows 8 or Windows 8 Pro that was pre-installed on a machine that you bought from an OEM, as long as that's activated via a retail product key or using OEM activation, you'll be able to install the update from the Windows Store to take the machine from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. The process that you would go through to do that is fairly simple. You can go to preview.windows.com. There will be an update that you need to download and install on the machine. Once that update is installed, then the Windows Store will offer an app to you, where that app is really the Windows 8.1 update itself. It then gets downloaded and installed on the operating system. The machine reboots a few times, and now you're running Windows 8.1. That experience, though, is only for OEM and retail machines. If you have a machine that's activated using volume activation, either KMS or Mac, you won't be able to use the Windows Store to update to 8.1. The only way to update is using the ISO, using the media that you would be able to get now once it's available on the download center, and in the future what you would be able to download from the Volume License Servicing Center. So that basically means, well, if you're going to be doing enterprise deployments of this, you need a mechanism to be able to push out that update. And what better thing to use than something like System Center Configuration Manager to push out that update to the existing machines? We'll take a look at that in a minute, but basically that's just a software distribution process. It's not an OS deployment process per se. It's really just taking the Windows media, turning it into a package, and then running a command line to install the update on the machines. Behind the scenes, there are plenty of enhancements to this installation and update process. There's basically a new user interface that simplifies the process. There's also a new command line switch /auto, which enables you to automate this updating process. And just overall, it's a very simple, fast, reliable process of installing the update. It's not really like the service pack installation process before, which is why we don't call it a service pack. It is an update. The update process updates the OS in place to the new version. So you then kind of have a couple of options. You can use that update engine to take a Windows 8 computer to Windows 8.1. Or you could treat it more like a traditional OS deployment and use MDT or Config Manager to do the refresh type scenario. If you do a refresh, what you're basically doing is running the USMT to capture the user state, removing the existing OS, installing a new operating system image by applying it to the existing partition, reinstalling your applications, and then restoring the data and settings. If you choose the update route basically has Windows setup, the update engine, doing the bulk of that work for you. It will still capture all of the data, but at the same time, it will also capture all of the apps. It then removes the existing operating system, installs that same new OS image, and then restores the data, settings, and applications back into that new operating system image. So the net result is 8.1 with all of your data, settings, and apps preserved. So you can choose to do it either way when you're coming from Windows 8. 8 to 8.1 can use either of these mechanisms. If you're coming from something earlier than that, though, really the refresh option's the only effective way to go. So let's say you have machines running Windows 7. Well, Windows 7 to Windows 8.1, you would go through that top process using MDT, using Config Manager, just like you use probably to get from XP to Windows 7. If you're running Windows XP today and thinking about going straight to Windows 8.1, well, that's something that we'll talk about more later. There are some limits in the USMT tool that will cause some challenges for those of you thinking about going straight from XP to Windows 8.1. But otherwise, you can choose which option. We hope that most people running Windows 8 will opt for the second choice, but the first one is perfectly valid as well. It's a question. Yes, so the question is, well, can I just import 8.1 into MDT and do a clean install? Yes, although you do need to use the new ADK for 8.1 and MDT 2013. Those are the versions that offer support for 8.1. So we have these two options. These two options kind of have their pluses and minuses. So why would you choose to do one versus the other? Well, running the update process is pretty simple. You don't really need to do a whole lot of upfront work to update MDT or update Config Manager or install the new ADK. You really just need a mechanism to run an automated command line, which Config Manager can do quite easily. That update engine is much better than it has been in the past. It's faster, it's reliable, it requires less disk space while it's going through this process. You don't need a new golden image of 8.1 to do this. In fact, you can't use your own golden image. The only image that you can use to do this in-place update is the original install.wim. The reasoning behind that is, if you think about it, when the new operating system image gets laid down, the setup engine needs to merge the apps back into that operating system image. Imagine you built a golden image containing, say, Office 2013, and the setup engine captured Office 2010, and now it tries to merge those two together. The result's not pretty. So that's not supported. The only supported mechanism is to use the original install.wim. That update process does preserve applications. It will migrate all your data. So basically anything that doesn't look like it's part of the OS gets migrated. So there's no customization or configuration of USMT needed. You just run setup.exe/auto and it takes care of the rest. On the other side, if you're doing a traditional refresh, that's what most enterprises are used to, and usually they think about it as the best way of getting a clean install of the new OS. And that's certainly true, but if you think about what's happening in the update case, you're still getting a clean OS because it's still going to remove the existing OS and lay down a brand new image. But what you won't have in the update case is clean apps, because all of the apps and all the data gets merged back into the operating system. It is more flexible to do a refresh since you can use a custom image in that case. It is easier to upgrade existing applications at the same time. Maybe you wanted to move to Office 2013 at the same time you're going to Windows 8.1. That's easy to do. Just put Office 2013 in your new image, or use MDT or Config Manager and have them install it as part of the OS deployment process. You can also use the refresh for cases where you're moving from x86 to x64. The update process only works if you're keeping the same architecture. So if your goal would be to move from Windows 8 x86 to Windows 8.1 x64, refresh is the only choice. Now, in order to do that whole refresh process, there is going to be more upfront work because you need to have drivers, you need to have apps, you need to have the full deployment set to put into MDT or Config Manager to get the operating system fully configured after it's been installed. But that's basically the pros and cons. In the end, you choose which of these options you're most comfortable with. We hope that there will be some customers that go through the update process. In fact, we know Microsoft IT is going through that right now. Yesterday, they made available internally through our Config Manager infrastructure the same update process that we've been talking about here, and we've got tens of thousands of employees going through that right now and installing the 8.1 update. Our goal for our Windows 8.1 preview is to have at minimum 20,000 machines installed through Config Manager using that update process to prove to ourselves that it is reliable enough for large-scale enterprise deployments. So we'll see what the results of that end up being. We'll document that as a case study. We'll say, well, here are the things that we found. Here's what worked well. Here are the product improvements that we pushed for to make sure that the little issues that we run into get fixed for everyone else. But that's what we're working on internally right now. Yes, right. So we will have a large percentage of our employees moving from our existing Windows 8 environment to Windows 8.1 preview. Now, there are some gotchas with the preview, and we'll post a blog later that kind of re-stresses that as well. Once you move to the 8.1 preview and you then want to later use that update process to go from 8.1 preview to 8.1 RTM, it will migrate your user data, it'll migrate your accounts, it won't migrate your apps. The upgrade engine isn't being tested to go from preview to RTM, it's only being tested to go from 8 to 8.1. So we don't support that option. So we'll migrate your data, that's no problem, we can take care of that, but you'll have to reinstall your applications when you go from preview to RTM. Right. Yeah, and that's a good point. The comment was that eventually you're probably going to need to use the second option because you're going to be deploying new computers, and you're not going to deploy Windows 8 to a new computer and then immediately turn around and update it to 8.1. Exactly. So you would have the right-hand process in place for new computer deployments regardless. You're just going to be using that update process to go from 8 to 8.1 on already deployed machines. So let's take a look at that process just to see what would it take to update your existing 8 machines to 8.1 using something like Configuration Manager. So let me get into my machine here. So I have Configuration Manager installed, and this is Configuration Manager R2 Configuration Manager Preview. I'm looking at the operating system section inside of Configuration Manager, and we're not going to use that at all to deploy this update. So even though I have standard Windows 8 Enterprise, Windows 8.1 Enterprise images here, to deploy the update, I'm not going to use the OSD feature at all. I'm going to use software distribution. So to do that, we would need to go under Application Management and create a package. So I've created a package here called Windows 8.1 Enterprise x64 Full Source. Basically, I took the contents of that USB key or the ISO file that you've downloaded and turned that into one large package, and then added a program to that package. So I have one program defined here, which I can see down below, called Automated Update. If we look at the command line that's specified there, not a lot to it. I need to specify setup.exe/auto:upgrade. That's all that's necessary to take an existing 8.0 machine to 8.1. So I've created that, and then I've deployed that to, in a couple of different ways. I deployed it to all systems as a required update and to all users as an available update. Anyone care to guess why I would do such a silly thing? Well, the all systems required update is basically taking advantage of the ability for Config Manager to push out the bits. So I'm doing a required update to all systems because it will pre-cache all of the bits on the computers that I want to update. So I've put a start date on that for a year out in the future. So even though it's mandatory, it's not going to run. It's just going to get the bits on all the computers, which then means that that second option is going to run very quickly because the bits are already on the machines. So the second one, in this case, I'm deploying it to all users, which is kind of what MSIT is doing. They're making it available to all users so that you can go to the application catalog, select it, and click install. You could also target all systems as a mandatory or an optional advertisement and then use the software center to install it. So you have a few choices there. In this case, I chose to target all users so that I could get to it from application catalog. So if I go over to my Windows 8 machine, I'll run software center primarily so I can get to the application catalog. And from there, as soon as it loads, assuming it loads. What was the question? The question was, will it work for Windows RT as well? No. If you go back and think about the scenarios, when we're talking OEM and retail, updates come through the store. When we're talking about volume license versions, we can do that with Configuration Manager. Windows RT is always OEM, so you would always update Windows RT through the store. You'll never see an ISO or media for Windows RT. In this case, I think my application catalog is actually broken. Let me try to run it again here. It's not even loading. So I'll just run it directly through the Software Center. So let me go ahead and click Install to start that process. Sure. So the question was, does KMS activation work with Windows 8.1? Yes, kind of. So Windows 8.1 does require a new KMS key. It would require a hotfix for existing KMS servers. It would work without a hotfix on server 2012 R2, but the product keys necessary to activate a KMS server for Windows 8.1 aren't available for the preview. They'll be available at general availability. The same is true for Mac keys. Mac keys need to be updated for Windows 8.1. The updated Mac keys won't be available until general availability as well. So for 8.1, you'll be using an evaluation key to install it. That evaluation key is good for 6, 7, 8 months, something like that. So it's far enough out in the future that when the final RTM release is available, you'll still have plenty of time to get off of the preview and onto the final release. So in this case, I ran the setup.exe/auto-upgrade. It doesn't ask any questions. It just kicks off the update process, and it will run without any user interaction through the whole process. It'll reboot a few times. Yes, we've asked to see if they could take away the cancel button, and so far they've said no. So the user could click cancel to get back out of it. If they do that, no harm is done. It's not going to cause any permanent damage. We have made sure that they properly set a return code from setup.exe so that you can detect that it failed because the user clicked cancel. So at least we'll be able to get back some software distribution statistics from Config Manager to see what machine succeeded. Well, they'll end up in Windows 8.1, so those are obvious. And then which ones failed and why did they fail? There are a variety of checks performed as part of this initial process to make sure that there aren't any blocking issues. So if we detect any incompatibilities with existing drivers, apps, BIOSes, hardware, whatever the checks are that we have, we would then fail this and report back a return code saying that a failure occurred. Now, in order to troubleshoot that, you would need to dig into the Panther logs and see what was the incompatibility that caused the failure in the first place. We don't have any mechanism right now to really provide that in a machine-readable way back to Config Manager. The question was, will this work like a reset or will this work like an upgrade? It will work like an upgrade. So all of the existing desktop modern apps will all be preserved. All your user data, accounts, and Windows settings will all be preserved through this process. So it is truly an in-place update, in-place upgrade process taking you from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. Including desktop apps, including everything. So that will be the detail that hopefully we spelled out clearly in the blog that we put out on Springboard later today to say Windows 8 to Windows 8.1 preview, everything is migrated. Windows 8 to Windows 8.1 RTM, everything will be migrated. Windows 8.1 preview to Windows 8.1 RTM, just data. With the big warning on it that says this is a non-production operating system that when you sign up to run the beta, that's basically what you're getting yourself into. If things don't work well, you have a backup, hopefully, and you can roll back if you need to. So this process will continue to run through. It'll reboot a few times. We'll come back and check on it later just to see what it ends up looking like. But that's the update process that we would want people to at least consider for those machines that are running Windows 8 today. It's an easy way to go from 8 to 8.1 with minimal effort. So let's dig a little deeper into, question. Right. So, yeah, we should probably drill into that a little bit more, too. The question was really talking more about Configuration Manager. So what's actually required to do this? And what I was running there was Configuration Manager 2012 R2 Preview, because that's the version that has full OSD support for Windows 8.1. It works with the new ADK, the new version of Windows PE, the new version of USMT, and Windows 8.1 itself. But I'm not using OSD in this case, so the same process would work just fine with Configuration Manager 2012 SP1 and even Configuration Manager 2007. As long as you have the necessary compatibility fixes for Windows 8.1 on those versions. So the Configuration Manager team would need to provide updates for those releases to enable compatibility for 8.1, which would allow you to manage Windows 8.1. Once you can manage it, then you can use software distribution to do the update. You still won't be able to do operating system deployment using Configuration Manager 2012 SP1, Configuration Manager 2012 RTM, or Configuration Manager 2007 with Windows 8.1. You will need to move to Configuration Manager 2012 R2 to use OSD with Windows 8.1. Now, for the upgrade paths for Configuration Manager, they just generally have never supported upgrades from a production Config Manager 2012 SP1 to an R2 preview, nor from the preview to an RTM release. So they would always tell you to do a clean installation of the preview, and when it's time to go RTM, wipe it clean, uninstall it, and then install the new one and reconfigure everything from scratch. Because it's kind of the same way with Windows. They don't put in the effort to test a preview release to RTM release upgrade. They just do the SP1 to R2 upgrade testing. Okay, so looking at Windows 8.1, looking at the images, the image for Windows 8.1 has grown a little bit from the Windows 8 image. Not drastically. It went from 1.96 gig up to about 2.13 gig at this point. We don't think that'll change much over time, but it is a little bigger image. But interestingly enough, when you expand it and put it on disk, it actually gets smaller. That one still causes some head scratching, but there are weird things that happen with compression sometimes. So it doesn't compress quite as well, but the actual size of the OS is a little smaller. When we do a new computer installation, yeah, we can install it onto a machine in about 10 minutes using the same hardware throughout this, just so that we have some consistency. So it takes about the same amount of time to install 8.1 as it does to install 8. To upgrade, so in the case of 8.1, to upgrade from Windows 8 to 8.1 on the same hardware takes about 20 minutes. We've seen ranges of times from the fastest machine I think we've tried is a ThinkPad X1 Carbon, upgrades in about 13 to 14 minutes. The slowest machine, some of the older machines with spinning hard disks, can take an hour to go through that update process. If you're pulling the bits across the network, then of course the network speed comes into that as well, so that hour could become longer. Just depends on how quickly you can read the installation files over the network. But overall, the upgrade process, the update process being used to go from 8 to 8.1 will be about the same performance as what you would have seen if you upgraded a machine from 7 to 8. No big changes there in the overall size and performance. We've already talked about that. We can skip through that one again. Let's talk about deployment tools. So in the case of Windows 7, we had the Windows AIK. For Windows 8, we had a new release of the Windows ADK, which replaced Windows AIK. So hopefully you've figured out that AIK became ADK. Effectively, they're the same thing. We just have a new kit name that contains all the same tools that you had before, plus some additional ones that were a separate download. Now for 8.1, there will be a new ADK. The preview of that's already available. It's basically just incremental updates, so no massive changes to that. We do see new versions of Windows PE and new versions of USMT, which are the key deployment tools. That new kit will be required for both MDT 2013 and Configuration Manager 2012 R2. So they won't work with any previous versions, regardless of what OS you're trying to deploy with the new version of MDT and Config Manager. They basically have made a statement that we're just going to test and support those new releases with the newest ADK, but we'll still be able to deploy Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 8.1 using the latest ADK and the latest MDT or Config Manager. So ADK 8.1 contains Windows PE 5.0. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Contains USMT, which I'm just calling 6.3 in parentheses because they haven't told me exactly what version they want to put on that yet. When I asked the question, they said, well, we'll give USMT the same version number as the operating system. Okay, the operating system version is 8.1. They said, no, the operating system version is 6.3. I think the preview release is 6.3.9431.0. Well, I'm not going to call it USMT 6.3.9431.0. So we'll call it 6.3 for now, but still, who thinks of it as Windows 6.3? No, everyone thinks of it as Windows 8.1. So we're still arguing about that one, but it's a new version of USMT. The other tools aren't changed drastically. Windows System Image Manager hasn't changed at all. There are some new options on DISM. We'll talk a little bit about those. ImageX is still around, but really hasn't been changed because all the functionality's moved into DISM. The App Compat Toolkit's been updated with minor changes, really just to make it aware of the new 8.1 operating system. Volume Activation Management Tool, just bug fixes for the most part. Windows Performance Toolkit, Windows Assessment Toolkit, minor changes overall to those additional tools. So let's talk more about Windows PE 5. The enhancements in Windows PE, there's a new feature to allow it to automatically determine the amount of scratch space. So when Windows PE boots up, it boots into a RAM disk. That RAM disk is writable. In order for it to be writable, it's overlaid with a RAM disk. That RAM disk by default was 32 megabytes. Maybe that's not enough for the types of things that you want to do. So you could make that bigger. You could make it up to 512 megabytes if you wanted to. The behavior that they've made for Windows PE 5.0 is if you don't specify a scratch space size and the machine has less than a gig of RAM, it will pick 32 meg, which was the default before. If it has more than a gig of RAM, it will use 512 meg, which is the maximum scratch disk size, because it knows Windows PE needs less than 512 meg itself. So it will just use the rest of the RAM for scratch space. The challenge with that is MDT explicitly sets the size to 32 meg all the time, so MDT can never take advantage of this capability because there's no option in the deployment workbench to say use default behavior. All you can say is 32, 64, 128, 256, 512. So we've got some DCR requests submitted to see if we can fix that, but for right now, yes, that new capability is there. It should work fine with Configuration Manager for the default Configuration Manager boot WIMs. But if you manually create one, leave the scratch space default, and you'll get that. If you're using MDT to create one, MDT won't be able to take advantage of this. They've also increased the amount of RAM that's supported in Windows PE because apparently we have people who want to use Windows PE to do RAM tests on systems that have up to 4 terabytes of RAM in them. I would love to have one of those systems, but I have never seen a machine with that much RAM in it. But just in case, you can run a 64-bit version of PE with up to 4 terabytes of RAM and it'll see all of that memory. For x86, the limit hasn't changed. It's still 64 gig. I would love to see an x86 system that has 64 gig in it because once the OS boots, it can only access about 3 gig of that. So you would waste the other 61, but that's just an aspect of the platform that is kind of strange. There was a feature added in the previous version of Windows PE to allow you to profile Windows PE. and then remove all the components that weren't loaded. So you could shrink down your Windows PE image by stripping out everything that wasn't used during a boot process. Well, they discovered that almost no one ever used that functionality, so why continue to support it? They removed it. So with Windows PE 5.0, profiling's no longer there. Windows PE's not that big anymore. Maybe it was big back when the network speed was 10 megabits, but today we've got 100 megabit and gigabit connections to most machines, so we don't really mind so much that Windows PE is a couple extra megabytes of, has a couple of extra meg of stuff in it. So no more profiling support. There have been updates to the components that are present in Windows PE. The names of them have changed a little bit for the .NET framework and for PowerShell. So if you're building boot images yourself and you've got, say, a batch file or a script to do that, you might need to tweak the script to specify the new component names. Those are the types of changes being made behind the scenes in MDT and Config Manager to make sure that it can still add .NET and PowerShell into the boot images. It will include the latest version of PowerShell, the latest version of .NET as part of the ADK kit, just like the operating system 8.1 will have. But they're basically incremental updates to PowerShell and the .NET framework. There's still support for BitLocker pre-provisioning. That was a new feature added in Windows PE 4.0. That really doesn't change in 5.0. The advantage of that is we can enable BitLocker while we're in Windows PE for a new computer deployment, telling it to only encrypt use space, of which there is none at that point because there's no OS yet. But then we can apply the operating system image to that encrypted disk, encrypting the OS data on the fly with almost no performance hit. So at the end of the deployment process, all we had to do were put the BitLocker protectors in place, and now the machine is fully encrypted and fully protected without the extra 2 hours or 3 hours at the end of the deployment process while it encrypts in the background, which impacts the machine and the free disk space and all other types of challenges with that. So if you're not yet using the new version of Windows PE and using BitLocker pre-provisioning, we would encourage you to do that. It does work with Windows 7 and Windows 8. We'll continue to work with Windows 8.1. Question? So the question is, can I use the Windows 8.1 setup.exe to roll out Windows 7? Well, I don't know the exact answer to that question, but my response back would be, why would you want to? In the case of MDT and Config Manager, yes, but the reason I asked the question, though, is setup.exe does a few different things, all of which you can do without using setup.exe. Basically, formatting and partitioning the disk, you can run scripts or PowerShell or diskpart to do that. You can apply the operating system, which you do with ImageX or DISM, and you set up the boot using DISM or BCD boot. You can also do offline servicing to inject drivers, install language packs, install security updates, which you would do with DISM. So those are the four things that setup does. You don't really need setup to do any of them, which is why MDT and Config Manager have both moved away from ever running setup.exe so that they don't need to worry about, well, what version of setup is compatible with what version of the operating system. It's just easier to not use setup at all. Especially when it comes to that last point. If you ever try to run the Windows 7 setup.exe on Windows PE 4 or Windows PE 5, it pops up an error message telling you that it couldn't find an entry fastprox.whatever in a particular DLL. But that issue is still going to be there. It's not ever going to go away. So it's just easiest to move away from using setup.exe altogether when you're doing that type of automated deployment. Now, when you're doing an in-place update, yeah, setup.exe is key to that process because it does all the work for that. But for a bare metal deployment or a refresh deployment, setup.exe is not needed as part of that. Windows PE 5.0 and Windows PE 4.0, because they're based on Windows 8.1 and 8.0 respectively, do have the same hardware requirements as those full OSs. So PE 5 does need NXPAE and SSE 2 support. As we mentioned before, there are some older, lower-end machines that won't have that, and VMware 5 doesn't have that, so you may have some machines that aren't capable of actually running Windows PE 4 or 5 and won't be able to run Windows 8 either. There is a script that was posted by Russ Rimmerman that tells you how to inventory that information using Config Manager, so you can get an inventory of what machines include that support, which ones don't, and then run a report to see, of all of my thousands of computers in my environment, are there any that don't include this particular support? Now, there are a few little tweaks that we may need to make to do that similar check for 8.1, but the likelihood of running into machines that have the challenge with 8.1 is fairly low. We've seen like one processor so far that didn't include the necessary support, and it's not the typical processor that you would see in a business environment. It's very low-end processor that you would use in a home machine, maybe as a NAS-type device or something along those lines. But we'll work on getting some additional guidance out for that as well. Now, when it comes to USMT, the new USMT, not surprisingly, adds support for Windows 8.1. It also adds support for Office 2013, so it's built into USMT 5 by default. If you're deploying Office 2013 now, there is a hotfix available for USMT 4 to add the support for that. USMT 5. Yeah, I just get thoroughly confused with the version numbers that they put on this, but basically the USMT version for Windows 8, there is a hotfix to add Office 2013 support. The USMT for Windows 8.1 includes that by default. Where it gets interesting is this matrix. So you can look at the operating system that you're coming from, the operating system that you're going to, and the versions of USMT that are capable of doing that. Not surprisingly, to go from Windows 7 to Windows 8.1 requires the new version of USMT. To go from 8 to 8.1 or 8.1 to 8.1 all require a new version of USMT that supports 8.1. The two not supported lines should draw some attention, though. Basically, that means that it's not possible to capture user state from XP or Vista and then restore it to Windows 8.1. The new USMT doesn't support executing on XP or Windows Vista. There's a hard block in place. If you try to run them on those OSs, they'll come back with an error saying that the tool's not supported on this version of the OS. So that causes a little bit of grief for anyone looking to go directly from XP or Vista to Windows 8.1. Question? It's an interesting discussion. To get into the whys, you have to understand that USMT is using the same migration engine as the setup tool uses. So the setup.exe for Windows 8.1 and USMT share the same migration engine. And setup.exe chose to remove support for migrating from older operating systems. So you can use it to go from 8 to 8.1, migrating apps and settings and data. You can use it to go from 7 to 8.1, migrating just user data. But for older OSs, they would just tell you, do a clean install of the OS. Well, that affects USMT as well, because USMT is using the same engine. If the engine doesn't support the migration from those OSs, then USMT says, well, we can't support that either. We'll have to block it. That said, we're still discussing that with the engineering team to see what we can come up with. So if that's going to present a problem for you, certainly send me an email and let me know, company name, number of seats, and we can start to gather the business case for them to say, we really need to come up with a solution for that. So just out of curiosity, for those of you in the room, how many of you are still running XP? It's maybe 20%. How many of you would think about going from XP directly to 8.1? maybe one. So for those of you going from XP to 7, which hopefully you're busy working on, or XP to 8, which would be okay as well, those will be fine. You'll just continue to use the existing releases of MDT, Config Manager, USMT, and everything's okay. It's just if you're saying that, well, no, we'll wait, we'll stay on XP a little while longer, we'll sign that extended support agreement, we'll pay Microsoft to continue to run XP until we can go directly from XP to 8.1, yeah, that's going to cause some head scratching in those cases. So we're still discussing it. Hope maybe we can get that to change, but definitely no commitment at this point. Next tool in the ADK, the DISM tool, adds a new option called Export Image that's specifically for the recovery environment. And what it basically does is it can export an image using a different compression format, and it just reduces the size of your recovery image. So it's really designed for OEMs who want to include a recovery image on the machine but not use so much disk space, which is great for a 32 gig device that doesn't have a whole lot of disk space to begin with. That image format is still a WIM file, but it's not a traditional WIM file. You can't mount it, you can't do a lot of the same operations. It's really just optimized for being applied. So it's only really applicable to this recovery image scenario. So you would have to take an existing WIM and then say export it in this format to use only with the recovery environment. There's also a new option on the DISM command line to do a component cleanup. Not sure if you were even aware that that option existed, but you can run a command on Windows 8. You could say dism.exe/online, to say for the currently running OS, /start component cleanup. And what that will do is it'll go through all the components that are in the operating system and physically remove superseded versions of those components. So if you've installed a whole bunch of security updates, you might have 3, 4, 5 different versions of a Windows component. That command would remove all but 2 of them. It would not remove the original one. It would not remove the current version that's being used. So with 8.1, they've added a new switch called reset base. So you can add /reset base to that command, and that causes it to remove all but one. So now it will remove the original version and only leave the latest active version. That obviously causes some issues. If you ever wanted to revert back to the original version, you would have to be able to download that component from Windows Update to put it back into the OS. But if you're wanting to save the disk space, well, you could run /start component cleanup/reset base, and it will make sure that the operating system contains only one version of every component, which keeps the operating system size to a minimum. Just another mechanism that's being put in place to make sure that we can keep Windows from growing over time, which causes challenges on machines that don't have a lot of disk space. We have a lot of additional functionality that carries over from Windows 8. DISM includes all of the imaging functions that used to be provided by ImageX. ImageX is still around, but it's not being enhanced. It does support mounting VHDs and WIM files. It supports pretty much all the operations on those types of files. There are a few PowerShell commandlets for some of the DISM functions. There are more PowerShell commands in 8.1 for the DISM functions, but it's still not complete. They're still going to be working on that over time to convert all of it into PowerShell. The key pieces that I talked about yesterday, and I know Mark talked about in his session right before this, are to use the DISM commands and the PowerShell commandlet equivalents of those to do Windows Store app provisioning and installation, or Windows 8, or whatever term you want to use for these apps, to install or provision the new style modern applications into your operating system. So you're asking if you can use the latest DISM to apply, say, a Windows 7 operating system?
I have a 7 domain image, hybrid image,
Okay. Put the 8.1 image of DISM into the operating system, into the Windows 7 OS? Oh, sorry, Windows 8 OS. Well, there's no way to do an offline update of a Windows 8 image to Windows 8.1. There's no way to take just the DISM components in Windows 8 and update them to Windows 8.1. You can run the 8.1 DISM and... Well, you can run the 8.1 DISM from the ADK. It will just load the servicing stack from the 8.0 operating system image. So it's kind of a hybrid. You're running the new command line options through DISM.exe, but it's loading the old servicing stack from Windows 8. So you won't get some of the new functions that are coming from the new DISM, which is probably what you would be trying to achieve anyway. It's still going to have the same capabilities because those are based on what's in the OS, not really what's being provided by DISM.exe. Windows Performance Toolkit, if you haven't tried this yet, there were a couple of sessions this week that talk about using the Windows Performance Toolkit to help troubleshoot Windows performance issues. I don't know that there are any significant changes to this in the new ADK, but it's still a pretty cool tool that I would encourage you to try out. Basically, you can run xbootmgr.exe. So you basically take an existing Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1 machine, install the performance toolkit on it. You get a few executables. One is xbootmgr. There's also a Windows Performance Recorder, wpr.exe, and Windows Performance Analyzer, wpa.exe. When you run xbootmgr, it prompts you and says, okay, I'm going to restart the computer and monitor the startup process. It's going to continue monitoring that for up to 120 seconds after the boot process is finished. It'll show you a dialog box at the end where you can say, okay, I'm done, go ahead and finish, and write out a trace file. That trace file has an excessive amount of detail about the startup process for Windows. You can then use the Windows Performance Analyzer to read in that trace file and show you graphically, here's what happened over time during the startup process. These are the processes that were started, these are the drivers that were loaded, these are the services that started, here's the amount of CPU that they used, here's the amount of network bandwidth they consumed, here's the amount of IOs that they generated, and you can continue to drill into that data and try to figure out why is it taking Windows so long to start up. So these are the types of tools that our premier field engineers use to troubleshoot customer issues in the real world when you call into Microsoft support and say, I can't figure out why Windows is taking 2 minutes to start up. Last week it took 20 seconds. This week it takes 2 minutes. What changed? Well, they can go through this trace information and pretty quickly narrow it down to maybe it's a group policy, maybe it's a script that's being executed, maybe it's who knows what, but basically they can gather that information through the performance toolkit. Very nice tool, very easy to help you navigate through a complex set of data. Where it gets a little messier is understanding the set of data that you're navigating through. So it does take some practice, it does take some understanding of what's going on behind the scenes, which is why those other sessions would be good to show you examples of how those tools were used to drill in and see what caused the particular problems. I think the title of one of them was something like, how many cups of coffee does it take for Windows to start up? Basically, those are the types of problems that people have been reporting. It's taking Windows 30 minutes before I can log into my machine. What's going on? Well, you've got a problem. So we can use these tools to figure out what those problems are. So definitely try that out, see what you can do with this tool, watch those sessions, and figure out how you can use them. The assessment tools are a little more interesting. They're created for OEMs to be able to run a suite of tests against one or more systems, gather the results of those tests, and feed them back into either an XML file for a single machine or into a database if you wanted to analyze a whole bunch of machines. So OEMs use this to validate their systems to make sure they meet the Windows logo requirements. Windows 8 logo requirements say that machine must boot in 2 seconds, it must not take longer than X amount of time to load drivers. So there are very specific requirements that this is checking for. So it's written for OEMs, but that doesn't mean enterprises and IT pros can't use it. So you can use this and run your own suite of tests using the built-in tests. It's also extensible, so you could write your own scripts to hook into this and run additional sets of tests where they write out the results as an XML file and it gets pulled into the rest of the results. So you can try that out, but it's not one that I've seen used that much inside of enterprises, because generally it requires some time and effort as well as a lab environment to run this in. So you can test it out. It's part of the ADK, but it really is focused more on OEMs. We've already talked about BitLocker. BitLocker includes pre-provisioning support. That enables us to very quickly encrypt new computers. Very nice. I would encourage you to use that for Windows 7, Windows 8, or 8.1. You do have the new option to encrypt only use space. Windows 8 and 8.1 both support an automatic network unlock on trusted wired networks, which is an interesting capability that combines UEFI-based hardware and WDS. So you can have the machine make a WDS request at startup time to see, is this a trusted network? It can get back a certificate from WDS to say, yes, this is a trusted network. And because it's trusted, don't prompt for a PIN. If it doesn't get any response back from WDS, it can go ahead and prompt for a PIN. So you can have a very secure behavior on untrusted networks, prompting with additional protectors, or a more relaxed behavior when you're in a corporate environment. Not too hard to set up. It requires some configuration of WDS and some certificate work, but that is possible with UEFI hardware and 8.0 or above. 8.0 also added the ability for standard users to reset their PINs. One of the challenges with Windows 7 is you had to be an admin to change the PIN. Well, no longer with 8.0 and 8.1, standard users can do that resetting. UEFI is worthy of a session on its own, and there was one of those earlier in the week with Alfred and Frank talking about UEFI deployments. All Windows 8 logo certified machines will be UEFI capable and will come pre-configured with UEFI turned on. Any machine that ships with Windows 8 from the OEM, they're required to configure it using UEFI. It will also be configured with secure boot. Basically, that's a good thing. UEFI has lots of performance benefits, as it makes the operating system boot faster and resume faster from hibernation. And it also has security benefits to make sure that rootkits and other malware can't get into the operating system or into the hardware before the OS can defend itself. So it's definitely encouraged to leave the machines running in UEFI mode, although you can go into the firmware on most of these devices and turn off UEFI, turn off secure boot, and then deploy older OSs. So maybe you buy a Windows 8 logo certified machine and you want to put Windows 7 on it. That's generally going to be okay. You will have to turn off secure boot. That's guaranteed. Windows 7 does support UEFI, so you may be able to leave UEFI turned on, but it's just as easy to use the compatibility mode that's built into UEFI to emulate the old BIOS behavior when possible. That's where I say, well, we could have a much longer discussion around UEFI, because UEFI effectively has multiple classes. UEFI Class 1 systems basically are just exposed externally as a legacy BIOS, but behind the scenes they're running UEFI firmware. It's been around for like 5 or 6 years, and generally it's not even used anymore. There's then UEFI Class 2 systems, which can emulate a legacy BIOS, and can be using native UEFI. Most of the laptops shipped in the last 3 to 4 years and most of the desktops shipped in the last 2 to 3 years have supported UEFI Class 2. Most of them came pre-configured to use the compatibility mode, so the OS wasn't installed using UEFI. It was prior to the version of UEFI that came out for Windows 8, UEFI 2.3.1, UEFI was just a real pain to deal with. It didn't support Pixie. It had all kinds of limitations that made it a nightmare for anyone to use as part of a real-world deployment. But with 2.3.1 and the fact that everyone was required to use it with Windows 8 for logo-certified machines, it's been much improved. There are definitely guidelines in place, put in place by Intel and Microsoft and AMD and lots of other vendors to make sure that the experience is much better with 2.3.1. So if you have 2.3.1 machines, I'd encourage you to use UEFI. If you have anything running an earlier version of UEFI, yeah, don't even attempt it. Just use the legacy BIOS emulation. So I mentioned Class 1, Class 2. There's also a Class 3. A UEFI Class 3 system doesn't include a compatibility module, so it can't emulate the legacy BIOS firmware. As a result, you may not be able to install older operating systems on it. Like Windows 7 isn't supported on a Class 3 UEFI system. It doesn't have the necessary video support to boot the operating system. So if you were to acquire a UEFI Class 3 system and try to put an older OS on it, you're probably going to be surprised when things don't quite work the way you would expect. So you have to be aware of the systems that are out there that are Class 3 systems. The ones that I'm aware of right now, basically all Intel Atom-based tablets are generally Class 3 systems, and the Microsoft Surface Pro is a Class 3 UEFI system. So those systems you can't turn off UEFI. You can't turn on an BIOS emulation mode. You can always turn on and off secure boot. That's separate from this, but using UEFI is mandatory on a Class 3 system. Over time, we expect all systems to become Class 3 systems, but OEMs will continue to support that in the near term for any device that they think you might want to run an older OS on. So if you want to run Windows 7, they're going to provide that compatibility module to make sure you can do that. UEFI also has restrictions on cross-platform deployment, so we can't use UEFI, a 64-bit UEFI computer, to install an x86 OS without switching it over to that compatibility mode. So just be aware that UEFI is platform-specific. UEFI x64 is designed to run a 64-bit OS. UEFI x86, which is used on Intel Atom devices, is designed to run only an x86 OS. You can't do x86 on an x64 device. Like the Surface Pro is not capable of running an x86 operating system. It can only run a 64-bit OS. Secure boot on top of UEFI, yes, you can turn it off. You may need to use other OSs, especially older ones. If you're wanting to run other operating systems than Windows, a lot of them are adding in secure boot support or secure boot support. In order to do that, they just need to have the necessary certificates on their bootloader files. Not too hard for them to do. Windows Store apps, I did a session. When was that session? Yesterday, talking about ways of provisioning and installing Windows Store apps and setting up an enterprise app store. It's something that we would encourage you to look at as you're deploying Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. It's good to have a way of distributing apps inside of your enterprise. You can use a process called sideloading. For sideloading, you have to enable the machine so that they can do that, which is automatic with Windows 8 Enterprise and 8.1 Enterprise when you join it to AD. You can also do it by adding a separate sideload product key, which is provided for free if you have software assurance for Windows. If you don't, then you would have to acquire that key in order to be able to load Windows Store apps from someplace other than the Windows Store, even if they're apps being developed by your own developers. You can get a developer key. The developer key allows you to run any app on the system for up to 30 days. But that developer key would then have to be renewed every 30 days, which is kind of annoying for most of your users. So you would want to enable sideloading for any apps that you intend to run permanently on the machine, but put on the machine through some means other than getting it from the Windows Store. Windows to Go, one of the biggest things with Windows 8 Enterprise was the ability to put Windows 8 on a USB key and run it completely from that USB key. So regardless of what OS was on the particular laptop, you could plug in a USB key and reboot into Windows 8. And then when you're done, reboot again and be back into that other OS. So it's a good way of carrying around a portable environment, using it for testing, using it for a variety of different use cases. One of the restrictions with Windows to Go, besides it requiring Windows 8 Enterprise, was it also required specific hardware. That's not going to change. We do have more certified devices, and that list will keep getting longer. But one of the other restrictions was the Windows Store was turned off because of some licensing challenges. When you installed apps from the store on a Windows to Go device and then moved that device from computer to computer, it consumed the 5 installs that you were allowed for an app because each PC was seen as a different piece of hardware. With 8.1, we've removed that and turned the Windows Store back on because now we can figure out that, oh, this is a Windows to Go device. We don't need to worry about that consuming the additional licenses as it moves around. So definitely some improvements there with Windows to Go. There is Hyper-V in Windows 8. It's also in Windows 8.1. Hyper-V runs just like on the server, except it has a very specific hardware requirement. It requires machines that support SLAT, second level address translation. It's a processor feature provided by Intel, provided by AMD. They each have their own names for it, but basically it's a performance optimization to make sure that Hyper-V runs properly on machines with high-end video cards, which most laptops and desktops tend to have. It's not required on servers because most servers don't have high-end video cards. They have low-end video cards, unless you're using RemoteFX, which is why RemoteFX also requires SLAT. If you didn't have a SLAT-enabled machine and you tried to run a virtual machine on it and you had a high-end video card, your performance would be awful. You would curse at Hyper-V and say, why is my VM running so slow? Which is why that requirement's in place. If the machine doesn't support SLAT, the Hyper-V option in the Turn Windows Features On and Off dialog will be grayed out. It won't even let you select it. So then the question really becomes, well, how do I detect that? We do have the core info tool from SysInternals that will detect that for you. MDT also includes logic that just queries WMI. Windows 8 and Windows PE 4 and 5 and above include that property on the Win32 processor class. You can just look for second level address translation extensions. That'll be set to true or false depending on whether that's present. One of the other enhancements in 8.1 is the addition of UEFI support. So Hyper-V on server 2012 R2 and 8.1 now has a generation 2 VM and a generation 1 VM. Generation 1 VMs are the same as what's been out there for a while. They're using a legacy BIOS, emulates a legacy BIOS. The generation 2 machines use UEFI firmware. So that's the real difference between generation 1 and generation 2. That's provided on server 2012 R2 and in Windows 8.1. If we look at that real quick, on my laptop here, my laptop does support SLAT, so I do have Hyper-V installed. Oh, yeah, it would be helpful if you could actually see what I'm doing. So let's bring up the Hyper-V manager. I have a virtual machine configured with generation 1. And that one shows BIOS, which has a few BIOS options here, which allow you to set the startup order. If I look at a Generation 2 machine, we'll see that it now says firmware. We can enable secure boot in that emulated UEFI firmware, and we get much greater control over the boot order down to the device level, not just the type. When we turn one of these on, let me connect to it. Hit the power button. What we end up seeing is something that kind of looks like a UEFI device. With BIOS-based devices, you tended to see messages starting from the top left and working down. For UEFI-based systems, you'll see UEFI-based messages that will show up below. The other change that you'll be able to see on any UEFI-based system is instead of seeing the Windows logo on the screen, you'll always see the vendor's logo. In this case, the vendor's logo is Hyper-V. But this is a full UEFI environment, so if you're not familiar with UEFI and want to do some practicing of how to do UEFI deployments, set up a Windows 8.1 machine on something that supports SLAT and start playing around with the Generation 2 VMs. Very nice to be able to do this work in virtual machines. When we did all the development of UEFI, that wasn't an option. We had to do all of it on physical machines, and doing it on physical machines with beta firmware of UEFI was really challenging, but much easier now that it's provided in the new version of Hyper-V. Reset and refresh your PC was a new version of what used to be called Windows RE. It's been updated with some changes in Windows 8.1, mainly to support that new encryption format and being able to export it in a more compressed form. Otherwise, it really hasn't changed that much. We've talked about that before, that it is a little challenging for enterprises to use it because the idea is that recovery image contains everything necessary to reset the machine back to a usable state. If you're using MDT or Config Manager to do your deployments, that might not be true. You may have a thin image that doesn't have all the apps, doesn't have all the drivers, doesn't have all the security updates, doesn't join a domain automatically. So if a user were to reset their PC, they'd be left with something that they would look at it and say, where is everything? I can't get on the network, I can't get to the internet, I can't run my apps, I can't log in, I can't do anything. So I reset my machine and it's now worse than it was before. You could fix that. You could build a fat image containing the apps, containing the drivers, containing the updates, containing language packs, containing an unattend that runs through UBI and tries to join an Active Directory domain, but that's a fair amount of work. That's why we get into these challenges with enterprise use case scenarios. So look at it and try to figure out, does it work inside of your environment? If it doesn't, it's easy enough to just kind of tune that out. For corporate network connected machines, it's just as easy to reinstall the OS using Pixie. So Pixie boot the machine, reinstall over the network. It's really for those mobile machines that aren't connected to your corporate network that you would want to consider doing something like this and putting in the effort to solve those challenges that we just talked about. Slates and tablets can be a bit of a challenge as well. You need to be able to interact with them. Windows PE, sorry, still does not include support for an on-screen keyboard. There is work being done to provide that through the UEFI firmware, so some of the hardware may fix that problem. The touch screens do support mouse activity, so you can actually touch the screen inside of Windows PE and interact with it that way. But the tablet devices generally provide other challenges, like not supporting wired networking without a USB dongle. So generally, you tend to build up a kit of tools to use with these devices. USB Ethernet dongles, USB hubs so that you can attach multiple USB sticks and keyboards and mice and other things to them. Having docks around so that you can dock these machines, do the deployments to them, and then undock them when they're done to hand them off. So definitely when you start bringing tablets into your environment, test them out to make sure these deployment processes work okay. Disk partitioning, yeah, disk part will eventually go away. I would encourage you to look at the various PowerShell commandlets that can be used to replace disk part. They're very nice. They will eventually be used by all of our deployment tools. Roles and features. MDT Config Manager will be updated to make sure that we support the new features that are available in 8.1 and to use the supported mechanisms for doing that. MDT 2013, which there was a session going on at exactly the same time as this one, talking about the new version of MDT. That's available in preview form through Connect Now. Download that and try it out. It does require the new ADK. The biggest thing, though, is it's breaking from the past. So MDT 2013 adds support for Windows 8.1, but drops support for deploying XP, for deploying Vista, for Configuration Manager 2007, for Configuration Manager 2012 R1. It only supports deploying Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1. It only supports the new ADK. It only supports Configuration Manager 2012 R2. So if you wanted to continue to use any of those older OSs or older versions of Config Manager, don't go to MDT 2013. Continue running MDT 2012 Update 1. It will continue to be supported to support those older versions. There is a blog posting that went out yesterday that describes where to get it, how to sign up through Connect. No big changes in functionality. It's mostly bug fixes and additional support for the new ADK and the new version of Windows 8.1. The Configuration Manager 2012 R2 release also came out yesterday. Same basic story. It's added support for Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2. Older versions of Configuration Manager won't support Windows 8.1 deployment. They will support Windows 8.1 manageability. So if you just wanted to do patching or software distribution or inventory or something like that, you can use an older Config Manager. But to do OSD, you will need to move to Config Manager 2012 R2. Fortunately, going from 2012 SP1 to R2 is kind of like the traditional service pack model. Just run an in-place update to take you from Config Manager 2012 SP1 to R2 once it's finally released, once the RTM version's coming out. For the preview, do a clean install. For the final version, you'll be able to take your existing 2012 SP1 environment and upgrade it to R2. It will add in some additional capabilities for VHD creation and servicing. So you'll see a new node under OS deployment where you can create a VHD from a WIM file and then continue to service it. Really, that's designed so that you can then take that resulting VHD and put it into a System Center Virtual Machine Manager library. So use Config Manager to maintain your VHDs and then use VMM to deploy your VMs inside of your private cloud. And with that, we are out of time. So I would definitely encourage you to grab the Windows 8.1 preview. The ISOs should be available probably within the next couple of hours. You can download those and start using those with MDT and Config Manager. Try out the new Config Manager 2012 R2 release. The preview for that's out now. The preview for MDT 2013, the ADK, they're all available for you to download and install in your lab to start testing all of this out. Any feedback you have on any of those can be submitted through Connect for MDT and Config Manager, through the beta forums for the Windows 8.1 preview. I would encourage you to sign up for the MDT OSD mailing list through myitforum.com. There's lots of OS deployment discussions that happen around there. And we also have some TechNet forums and a Facebook page if you want us to periodically give you updates on what's changing in OS deployment. So with that, let's wrap things up since we're a little over time anyway, and just ask that you fill out your evaluations. And if you have any other questions, you can either come up front after the session and ask those, or I'll be downstairs for the Ask the Experts all evening. So thanks for attending. Hopefully that gives you kind of a picture of what's changing with 8.1 in deployment. Not a huge amount, but just some important things to keep in mind. Thanks for coming. Again, fill out your evaluations.